Now today I'm continuing a series that we're in. In fact, today we're halfway into this series. It will be the last series that I do here at Gisborne Church of Christ before my last Sunday here, which is in 2 Sundays' time on the 14th of Feb. Now this series is based out of this passage that you can see on the screen behind me. James chapter 4 verse 8, draw close to God and he will draw close to you. And what I want to do in this series that we're in is actually go through, I guess, five key themes, five key aspects of what does it look like to draw close to God. And the reason I'm doing this is because I think final words are actually significant and important. And if you could encapsulate that, which I guess I've felt God lead me to try and do over the last 10 and a half years, they are encapsulated in this series. In these 5 weeks, I'm calling this series CLOSE. Now, CLOSE is an acronym and it stands for the following. If you were here with us 2 Sundays ago, we explored how by contributing generously, you can grow closer to Jesus. Last Sunday, we explored how living justly enables us to draw closer to Jesus. Today I'm going to have a look at how being open to growth enables us to draw closer to Jesus. Next Sunday we'll explore sharing your faith, and then on the final Sunday that I'm here, we'll be looking at how we need to be empowering and releasing others. But today we're in this idea that we draw close to Jesus by being open to growth. That is being open to a fresh revelation and a fresh encounter with Jesus each and every day. You see, we don't ever make it, do we? We don't ever make it in our faith. There's always something new to learn. There's always a new revelation to become aware of. My daughter, Maria, during COVID times, when we're all in lockdown, started to bake. And she, in fact, she baked a lot. It was just sort of something that kept her going through each day. And I guess food technology is a subject that she was doing at school, though it seemed that she had food technology every single day of the week because she was baking all the time. And oh my goodness, the cleanup. It's unbelievable. My daughter has this unique gift. She's had it from a very young age of this ability to make a mess in a very short amount of time. And of course, she would say that she who cooks doesn't clean. Anyway, so I would be constantly following up with the sponge and the cloth and cleaning as we go because it was just mess going on everywhere. But one of the things that Maria did is she baked every day and she became really good at baking. And she still bakes often now, not every day, thank goodness, but she still bakes regularly. And this week we had some people that we invited over for morning tea and Maria decided to bake, which was good news, and she cooked brownies. Now, I don't know if you've ever tasted brownies before. Anyone ever tasted a brownie before? Anyone been lucky enough to eat one of Nikki Gallus's brownies? There's a few people here, yeah. Well, Nikki, you've got some competition in Maria because she nailed it. She nailed these brownies. Now there's a particular, I guess, art to a really good brownie, at least in my experience. You see, brownies can be overcooked really easily. And what happens if a brownie gets overcooked and they become really too hard and they're no good and they're just, you know, you got to really chew down on them and then the taste doesn't taste quite so good and it's not good. I mean, if you go to the coffee club or one of those, I better be careful what I say, not the coffee club, but another cafe that's no good, and if you go to them and you find their brownies are really hard and they're awful, they're no good at all. But then you can go to some other places and you find their brownies are a bit undercooked. And they turn up on a plate and there's this sort of gooey blob of mess and they're just really not that nice to look at. Well, Maria nailed it because the brownie that she cooked, a bit like Nikki's brownies, had this really nice firm texture on the outside. And you chew through it and then on the inside there's this gooey deliciousness. It's just really so nice and it's soft and it's really yum and it's just beautiful. And anyway, I probably had a few too many brownies this week. Sometimes when we've been a follower of Jesus for any length of time, we can get a bit of an attitude. It sort of creeps up on us, and it's almost like we start to think that, hey, we've learned some things here. You know, we've read God's word and we've studied it, and we've sat in lots of services like this, and we've listened to lots of sermons, and we've done other reading and all that, and we start to become a bit more assured about our faith. And that's not a bad thing, by the way. But one of the dangers of that is that we can lose that ability to see that fresh and that new understanding, that new learning of God. And I guess if you relate our faith to that of a brownie, it becomes a bit like that rock-hard brownie that's not very nice to bite into. There's a hardness. We've sort of put God in a box a bit. And one of the dangers of that sort of approach and that sort of attitude to faith is that we get a bit judgy. We sort of know what's right, at least in our own mind. We know what's right and what's wrong, and we get a bit judgy towards those who don't share exactly the same beliefs as ours. But then on the other hand, there's another danger that comes with following Jesus over a period of time. And that is that we start to deconstruct that which we have always been told and have grown up with. And again, that's not a bad thing to question things. In fact, we want you to question things. But if we start deconstructing everything about faith and about our understanding, then we risk throwing out the baby with the bathwater a bit. Our faith sort of risks becoming a bit like that gooey blob of mess on a plate. There's no shape to it. And we lose something in the process. One of the things that I've loved in my 10.5 years at this church have been that on the whole, almost without fail, I mean, we're not the perfect church, but on the whole, almost without fail, we have carried this posture together of openness to growth, a willingness to learn and to grow. And I guess in giving this message today, I want to encourage you to keep with that posture, to keep going with that posture. When I look at characters in the Bible, and I look at those for whom have demonstrated growth, not just at one point in their lives, but throughout their lives, I don't know if there's much better example than Peter, Jesus' disciple Peter. Now, Peter, in 1 chapter 3, verse 15, wrote this. He said, "But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect." And there's a couple of elements of this passage that I just want to draw out quickly. And that is that Peter is saying, don't put your brain into neutral. Think through things. Work through things around your understanding of following Jesus. Don't ever park your brain. There's always more to learn. And Peter says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone, anyone who asks you for the reason of the hope that you have. But then he goes on to say, do this with gentleness and respect. Now, you don't do 10.5 years in a leadership role in a church without there at times being conflict. It's just inevitable. It's going to happen. And one of the things as I reflect back on my 10.5 years at Gisborne Church of Christ is that we have done this almost always, so well. There have been times of disagreement. In fact, there have been times of significant disagreement. But I know I have, in my heart of hearts, I've always tried to hold and communicate with gentleness and respect. And I leave the church with that sense that that has also been something that has been directed at me, even when there has been disagreements. We've carried this idea of gentleness and respect. And you know what happens when you carry gentleness and respect in your attitude and in your communication towards others? You actually find that you learn from them. And so you might be having a disagreement, but if you're doing so with gentleness, if you're doing so with respect, what you find is that there is a new revelation, there is a new understanding about how God works that might be coming to you. Whereas if you approach it with the opposite, with a harshness and an arrogance, you'll miss out on the learning.
Now, I just want to delve into Peter a little bit more deeply. I want to have a look at three characteristics of Peter that I think allowed him to grow, to have this posture of openness to new understandings, new revelations. The first thing that I think we can learn from Peter is that he was humble. Peter was humble. Just next slide, thanks, Josiah. Peter probably suffered more rebukes, more criticism than any of the other disciples or early church leaders. If you look through the Gospels, it seemed like Peter was the one that was copping it most of the time. In fact, Peter probably copped the most stunning rebuke of all in Matthew chapter 16 when Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan." On the night before he died, Peter was rebuked twice, once in the garden, once in the upper room by Jesus. Peter experienced rebukes ongoing. And even it wasn't even just during those early formative years of his faith and his understanding of following Jesus. There was one that happened much later. In Galatians chapter 2, we read about Paul opposing Peter to his face and rebuking Peter. You see, Peter had sided with some Jewish believers who were keen on ostracizing and not including the Gentile believers. And Peter had become more concerned, even at this latter stage, this mature stage for him in his faith, he'd become more concerned about what people thought of him than what God thought. And Paul stood up to him. Now, you need to understand the context of this particular encounter to get a sense of Peter. You see, this is Peter, one of the first followers of Jesus, one of the 12 who got to walk the earth with Jesus and be part of that. This is Peter who preached on that day of Pentecost and saw 3,000 people won to Jesus. This is Peter who had the very first interaction with a non-Jewish believer in Cornelius, leading Cornelius to Christ. Here we have Peter. He is quite rightly, in the early church, considered someone of great stature. And then you have Paul, who had done some great things, but he's a bit of a Johnny-come-lately, really. Paul wasn't one of the original 12 disciples. In fact, Paul had been a persecutor. He'd been a murderer of Christians until he had an encounter with Jesus on the Damascus Road. And then after that encounter, he went out and he traveled all over the Roman Empire preaching the gospel and seeing people won to Jesus. But in terms of gravitas or charisma, I guess, or stature, at this stage, at this time, when he's opposing Peter, when he's rebuking Peter, Paul's here and Peter's up here. And yet what we learn from Peter is that time, again and again and again, every time he was rebuked, every time he copped some criticism, he got back on the horse, he learnt from it, and he went again. Peter was a long way off perfect, but the one thing that he did do is that he always took on the rebuke. He always sought to grow as a result. Now, no one likes to receive criticism. No one likes to receive a rebuke. But almost always, if someone is offering you a rebuke, or if someone is offering you a criticism, almost always they're doing it because they see a better version of you. They want you to be better. And in the Christian world, in the Christian sense, it's because they want you to grow closer to Jesus. Now, often when we receive criticism and we receive rebuke, we can often feel like it's unjust and it's unfair, because often those that are rebuking, those that are criticizing, don't get the whole picture. They don't see the whole picture. They don't see the stresses that you might be under at that particular time. They don't see what's happening in the background. And yet, almost always, even if it's just the smallest of small, there will be a skerrick of truth in that criticism. And those that are self-aware enough will be able to take that on board and be able to grow as a result and grow closer to Jesus. We see it in this characteristic of Peter, humility that he demonstrated. Another characteristic that he demonstrated was how he was brave. Peter was incredibly brave, especially compared to some of the other disciples. You see, it was Peter. He was the one that actually got out of the boat, didn't he? And he walked on water towards Jesus. He was the only one that did that. Peter was the one that, of all the disciples, they're sitting around there and the Holy Spirit comes on the day of Pentecost and Peter's the one that stands up and addresses the crowd. Peter's the one that speaks out and up against the Sanhedrin and the Jewish leaders and rulers of the day and ends up being put in jail and flogged as a result. Peter's incredibly brave. But as we look at Peter, we also see that he overcame significant fear in his life. When Peter denied Jesus 3 times, the night before Jesus died, Peter thought he was done. He thought it was all over. And we read of this interaction that Jesus has with Peter by the shores of Galilee. And 3 times Jesus says to Peter, "Do you love me?" And 3 times Peter responds back, "Yes, Lord, I love you." And 3 times Jesus says, "Feed my lambs, feed my lambs, feed my lambs." But what we see in this interaction is that within Peter there is this sense of self-doubt, this sense of unworthiness. It required the question to be asked 3 times for it to start to sink into Peter what Jesus actually had planned for him. Sometimes we allow fear to get in the way. Sometimes we allow fear to stop us from stepping out into that which God has for us. We know deep down that God is leading us in a certain direction, and yet fear stops us from being able to step out and into that. I want to encourage you today that if God has been stirring something up in you, a new plan maybe, a new purpose, a new revelation, and there's a fear around embracing that and following that, then to put that fear to one side, to follow Peter's example, and step into that which God has for you. Third and last characteristic of Peter that I want to explore is that Peter was reliant. Peter was reliant on Jesus. In fact, right at the start of Jesus' ministry, upon his first meeting with Peter, there is this remarkable interaction. So Peter was a fisherman, and he'd been out all night fishing, and he'd come back to the shore, and he'd caught nothing. And Jesus is standing there by the shore, and he says to Peter, "Throw your nets out to the other side." And Peter's incredulous about this. I mean, a carpenter telling a fisherman who's been out all night that he hasn't caught a thing and telling, no, you're doing it wrong, Peter, throw your nets out on the other side. But sure enough, Peter does, and what happens? There's this miraculous catch. And Peter knew straight away, this is no ordinary person that I'm dealing with here. This is not just a carpenter. Now, what's really fascinating is that after Jesus had been put to death, and after he'd risen again, and the disciples didn't know what to do, and those that were fishermen, they thought, well, we might as well go back to fishing. And they went out again, and they started fishing again. And sure enough, they'd been out all night and hadn't caught a thing. They come back, and there's Jesus by the shore. It happens again, exactly the same way. Bookending Peter's interactions with Jesus on earth. "Throw your nets out the other side, Peter." And he does, and there's a miraculous catch of fish again. All through Jesus' ministry, Peter got to observe the way in which he operated with great power. Amazing healings, delivering people from oppression, command over nature, calming the storms, turning water into wine, these incredible miracles. And so when Peter gets up on the day of Pentecost and starts preaching to a group of people who didn't know what was happening and weren't sure about all of this, and just a few weeks before had partly been responsible for putting Jesus to death, and he gets up and he starts speaking. He knows he's not doing it in his own strength. He's operating in reliance forward one more chapter in Acts, and we're in Acts chapter 3, and Peter is walking along the road there, and there's this lame beggar, couldn't walk, and he's begging for money, and he asks Peter for some money, and Peter says, "Silver and gold have I none, but what I have I give to you. In the name of Jesus, get up and walk." And that lame man got up and walked. Peter learnt to operate with reliance. He learnt to rely on God's Spirit to lead, to direct, and even to get him out of tricky situations, which occasionally he got into. Peter was humble. He was brave. And he was reliant. Previously, I've shared how for a good period of time, a couple of years or more, I've been sensing a stirring about what God has been saying to me in relation to my role at Gisborne Church of Christ. And there was this unsettling as far back as 2018. And for a long time, I put it to one side. I tried to step on it. I tried to ignore it. I tried to deny it. I tried to get rid of it. I tried to do everything until July of this year, when in a conversation with Kate, in a prayerful conversation, we opened ourselves up to the possibility that God was using this unsettling for something else, a leading out. And over that time, Kate and I have entered into what the anthropologist Victor Turner calls a liminal space. A liminal space is that space that you find yourself in between the present reality and an unknown future. And even though we have a clear sense about where we're going, there still is some liminality for us at the moment. We don't know quite what we're going to land into when we do start at this new role in May. We don't yet know where we're going to live permanently. There's a few other things that have come together, which has been really nice, but there's still this sense of liminality, and we've been sitting in this space for some time. Now, I'll let you in on a secret. Liminality sucks. It's awful. It's much better if you know what the future holds. There's a security and an assurance around that. But as much as it's frustrating, as much as it's difficult and challenging, do you know what happens during liminality? You open yourself up to growing. You open yourself up to a fresh revelation. In that state of uncertainty, you start looking for what is God saying in the midst of all of this. Gisborne Church of Christ is about to enter a season of liminality. And in this season, where there's a transition from the current reality to, at this stage, an unknown future, there is an opportunity for this church, as a collective, but also individually, there is an opportunity for growth. Because in the midst of uncertainty, in the midst of the future not being 100% clear, there is this opportunity to be humble before God, to be brave in stepping out into the things that he has for you, and to be reliant on him even though the future may not feel secure.